The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, The Talk Station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. I'm your host, John Johnston. As always, check us out on ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. Joining us a little later in the show will be Caleb Giddings. He was a competitor on the first season of Top Shot on History Channel, also president of Gun Nuts Media. We're going to be talking about product bias in gun media, competition shooting, and how he joined the ranks of defensive coffee cup users. But that's a story for later in the show. And joining me this week are two co-hosts, and not in the order that I prefer them, just I like them both equally, Mr. Jim Beatty and Andy Ulrich. How you doing, guys?
Good to be here, John.
Pretty good.
Hey, great. So, full house tonight, which is awesome. So pretty much what we're going to be discussing this evening is going to be just when you're doing your research, consider your sources and specifically whether or not those sources have a reason to be biased or not, or why they've come to the conclusions they've come to. Obviously, our own experiences are going to bias us one way or another, but then there's also some outside factors to consider, and just sort of know why you're making the decisions you're making. I mean, advertising's all well and good, but I mean, what's the point of advertising, Jim?
We want to sell a product.
We do?
We want to push it on you.
Oh, okay. Whether or not that product is actually necessarily the best one for you doesn't seem to be too big of a deal to the people advertising.
Oh, no. Or to the people doing the selling.
Yeah. Well, hey. And, you know, everyone's pretty much aware of that. It's that whole buyer beware. But it's just with things like this where, you know, if you're just going out to have fun on the range, then, hey, whatever, knock yourself out. If you want to buy, you know, whatever it is, your Blast-O-Matic 3000, I stole that from someone.
The 4000 is better, John. It's way, way better.
Oh, it is?
Oh,
that's not an assault weapon, is it?
No, no, I don't think so.
Not at all.
It's tan, so it's not evil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just, and think about this, too. People specifically go to school, to college, spend $100,000 learning how to sell you things. That is their job. And that's just, you know, some of the magazines you see stuff, it looks really cool, and I get it a lot. Hey, I want this gun. I want that gun. Well, and I'll say they're not generally the best guns to get, but they are the ones that have the prettiest pictures and spend the most on advertising.
And it's typically an emotional appeal, John. It's not a product-centered, fact-based appeal. They're trying to reach you somewhere, you know, whether it's your need for an uber tactical solution or something that's all black.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just, think of it this way, too. If you spend $600-$700 on something, obviously you've got a little bit of an emotional investment in it. It's not, you know, easy to spend that sort of money and then it doesn't work and go, oh, you know, usually you want to defend that or make excuses for it or find reasons why it's not a big deal or it doesn't matter. And honestly, hey, that's up to you. I'm becoming less concerned about what other people do. I can only give you my opinion, which is worth exactly what you paid for it, and just try and get everyone to think about what they're doing, what's important, a gun that works, you know, having the gun on you, very important, whatever that is for you. And there are certain brands that I absolutely hate, but if that's what you carry and yours works, then hey, rock on. So no big deal. You know, just the only thing that you can be sure of, though, with those is that they're trying to sell you something. And that's just something to be aware of, and I don't know that many people are when they do their research. So the question then becomes, if you're thinking about buying a gun for the first time, where do you go for information? And, you know, honestly, the guys that work behind the counter at gun stores are not always the best source of information because they're reading the same magazines you are. You know, are they going out and seeking training? Are they testing stuff out with their own dime and then coming to realistic conclusions about it? I mean, I try to do that, but not everyone does, and that's fine. But
what's their motivation? You know, in the sales world, guys even that aren't involved in the gun sales world know that there are discounts from distributors on certain products at certain times. So when you step into the gun store and you're getting that Glock pushed at you, is it because there's a spiff on that that the seller stands to make an extra $20, or is it because it's the best gun for you?
Well, and that's kind of why I like stores that don't work on commission. There are certain stores that don't, and they're pretty easy to find. They're the ones that aren't trying to push anything. Now, going back to Glocks specifically, I actually like those guns as far as reliability goes. I hate them for everything else, and they're ugly and have no soul. But, you know, it goes back to that. If it works, hey, whatever. It's just, honestly, if you buy a gun from one of the major manufacturers that's been adopted by some federal agency or some large local agency somewhere, it's probably an okay gun unless you've gotten a bad copy of it, which can happen for anything. I tell you what's really depressing is, you know, spending $3,000 or $4,000 on a gun, waiting a year and a half to get it, and then when you get it, it doesn't work. And that's sort of a downer right there.
And please don't carry it if it doesn't work.
Well, hey, and that's the best, too, is like people that'll buy things and then they don't shoot it. That's the other thing, too. If you've bought a gun, don't carry it until you've put a couple hundred rounds through it. I mean, there are, I've seen guns from great, great manufacturers. Just had one recently. I'm gonna try really hard not to call out any brand today because it would be easy to do that. And honestly, it wouldn't be fair. I don't like attacking folks that are not here to defend themselves, except Raven and Jennings, because they're terrible. But other than them...
what do you got against the Circle of Fire, man?
Oh, not, that's a good Johnny.
Find cast zinc copies of real firearms? What could be wrong with that?
Man, that was a good... Johnny Cash. I miss Johnny Cash. Oh, wait, Ring of Fire. Different thing.
Close.
You know... I'm going to try real hard not to call any specific company out other than the two I just did because I'm a jerk. It's not necessarily about, you know, brand X or brand Y. One of the major manufacturers, I had one of their pistols this week that I sold to someone that I've personally owned and carried because I think they're really good guns. He took it to the range, shot it, and the first couple rounds, the magazine fell out of the gun. Happened over and over again. Now, he brought it back to the shop, and I'm like, well, we're going to have to send this back to the company or whatever. And it turns out I pulled it apart and looked at it, and the mag catch was just out of spec. It's just out of the 1,000 that they're trying to pump out right now, one little tiny thing got done wrong and just, you know, didn't turn out. And that's a gun I consider to be golden. So it just goes to show that it's super important to test the gun before you trust your life to it. Have a realistic expectation of what it's capable of doing. You know, we had Todd Green on the show and talked about pistol reliability. And other than me hanging up on him a lot, there was a lot of good information there. Jim was there for that one. That was pretty good. There's a lot of good information there, though, as far as what you should expect or not expect out of your firearm. You know, why 50 or 100 rounds is not necessarily the best way to judge whether or not your gun is effective. There's all sorts of stuff. So, but anyway, up next, we've got Caleb on the line holding Mr. Caleb Giddings from Gun Nuts Media. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Wealthy and wise, the Steve Perrin Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Right now, joining us on the line is Mr. Caleb Giddings. Caleb, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thanks for coming on the show tonight. I really appreciate you taking time out of your Sunday.
My pleasure.
And it's actually more of a Sunday late afternoon for you since you're out towards the 2 hour behind time zone. Mountain time? Yeah, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah, so. We're in Central Time, so we're just an hour back.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, that's not as bad. So I guess if you don't mind, usually what I get into first with folks is what got you into shooting?
A long series of events. My dad was a cop. I joined the Coast Guard when I was 17. I shot NRA collegiate pistol, did pretty well at that, and then kind of just, you know, dinked around. And then I found IDPA, started shooting that, and got very involved in the action shooting community, and here I am now.
Well, there you go. So why don't you tell everybody about Gun Nuts Media and what that is and what y'all do and why it's awesome or not awesome or just all that, you know?
Sure. I started Gun Nuts Media
7 years ago now as just, you know, a blog because I wanted to talk about guns on the internet. And progressively over the course of time, it got popular. More people started reading it, which to this day baffles and confuses me, but people still read it. And I was able to turn it into a fairly successful website business, which has led to many other career opportunities to the point where about 3 years ago, I was able to quit working at real jobs, and now I write, shoot, blog, and sell advertising in the firearms industry full time.
Well, there you go. So that's got to be pretty cool. I'm working on it. I'm trying real hard. So I guess the first thing I kind of want to get into is obviously a lot of people. It seems like the big thing for folks is deciding what gun to buy or deciding what next gun to buy and how they come to that decision. I'm as guilty of that as the next guy, but I'm trying to sort of shift focus there. But what are your thoughts as far as the internet as a tool for research versus the older style gun magazines? And obviously I'm not going to name any names, but just sort of the plus and minus to the two approaches.
You know, if you'd asked me that question 3 years ago, my answer would have been completely different than what it is today. But the fact of the matter is that now the research and the, let me rephrase that, the value of the information that you're going to get from the internet and from a gun magazine is going to be entirely dependent on the source.
Right.
It used to be that, you know, you could go to a blog and you could count on that blog to be fairly independent-minded, and whether or not they were opinionated, whether or not they liked the gun, they would at least write an honest opinion. You wouldn't see soft reviews or things that were done to, you know, get more traffic or to keep an advertiser happy. But in the last 2 years, that landscape has changed. You've seen some really big names. One of the most interesting things that's happened is a couple of years ago, Demand Media, a company that everyone has actually read one of their sites. They own Cracked.com, like Golf.com, Livestrong.com. So these sites that are designed around generating SEO-optimized content, they spent about $800,000 and bought Guns.com.
Huh.
And so now you have Guns.com is being run, you know, by a bunch of guys who aren't shooters, they aren't enthusiasts. And I'm not trying to pick on the Guns.com guys. I actually know some of their guys, and most of them are really cool bros. But it's an example of how now there's big money in the online space as well. And a lot more bloggers are running ads. A lot more bloggers are trying to compete with the $800,000 budget companies like Demand Media that are getting into the gun space. And it's created an environment now where you once again have to be very discerning with how you take in your information. And you've got to understand that whether or not you're reading a gun magazine, which I still read, there's still a few gun magazines that I read. I genuinely enjoy reading Shooting Illustrated, one of the NRA publications. I still read a couple of the Harris publication magazines, Combat Handgun, but that's mostly because I write for them a lot. And I obviously read my magazine, Gun Up the magazine, because I think it's great and it's amazing and we don't do biased reviews, but I may be a little biased in my opinion, which, to bring this very long-winded answer around to a close, no matter what your source is, whether it's a gun magazine or a blogger, they are going to have a bias, and what makes the information valuable or not is whether or not they're transparent with their bias, and that's something I have always tried very hard to do with Gun Nuts and tell someone, you know, and I'll tell readers if I'm, you know, sponsored by this company or if, you know, I was sent this product for free to review. I want people to understand that, you know, I'm going to give it an honest review. And I've actually lost advertisers over that because I've had people send me product and I've said, look, I'm going to review this 100% honestly and I will do everything in my power as a writer to communicate with you if there are issues. And I've had people say, hey, you know what? No, we're not interested in you doing a review for us. And I'm like, that's cool, man. And everybody goes their separate ways and everyone's happy.
Right. So I think Jim's got a question for you, Caleb.
Hey, Caleb. A quick question. Have you seen, we've seen the penetration of advertising dollars into the blog space. Have you seen that, any funded infiltration, as it were, into the internet forum space where a casual discussion might be held more with people that are they're picking up dollars elsewhere, you know, media sources.
Yes, and I can't go into detail beyond that, but there are absolutely and I would call them less than scrupulous, but there are absolutely some companies out there that engage in that sort of brand management, and that is something that at GunUp that we do as well, but we never go to. So one of the things, and in the interest of full disclosure, something I talked about earlier, a huge part of my job is I sell online advertising for the GunUp Ad Network. So we partner with bloggers, and I sell their ad space to major companies, and that allows them to do what they're good at, which is create good content, and it allows me to do what I'm good at, which is be a slimy salesman. So again, everyone. And we do revenue share, so they get paid, we get paid, everyone's happy. One of the things that we also do is we'll do brand monitoring. So if one of our clients, you know, if I'm cruising 1911 forum and I see somebody talking about Colt. Colt is a client of ours, and we have a very strong relationship with them. What I would do is email our friends at Colt and say, hey, there's this discussion going on around the Colt brand. You guys might want to step in and say something about that. And we always counsel that you should be transparent. Say, when the client does that, they should go in and say, hey, my name is so-and-so, I work for Colt, and if you guys are having an issue with our product, please contact us. And that creates a positive customer service story. There are some less scrupulous groups that will, it's not technically sock puppeting, but they don't. But they go in and they don't disclose their relationship with a company or with a brand, and then they act as a brand advocate for that. And it's something that's happened in the cell phone space, and it's something that's happened in the automobile space, and basically any sort of consumer product vertical, that eventually happens, and it's now starting to happen at the gun space. And I don't like it, but there really isn't anything I can do about it other than call it out when I see it.
Right. I wouldn't shortchange yourself, by the way, Caleb. I don't think you're a slimy salesman, because you're a little too honest to be that, but, you know, so. Anyway, the people on the forum will like what I just did there. Anyway, so I had another question, I guess, about, and you're very, like you said, honest, and that's one of the reasons why I initially started reading, you know, stuff that you put out, and then the other bloggers that you run, you know, like, you know, Gabby and Shelly and Tim and all them, their articles are great because you know where they're coming from at the very least. And that's mm-hmm. that's sort of what I was saying in the beginning, at least understand where the bias is at.
Yeah.
With doing that, and even though you're transparent about it, would you say that it is easy to fall into the trap of putting a positive spin on things that don't necessarily deserve it? Or, you know, what do you think?
You know, writing for print magazines and writing for and knowing now that I have advertisers that I'm beholden to and a lot of other things, it changes the way that you construct your articles. And it changes a lot of the way that you word things. And I believe that it is possible to write a review, and I've done it, of products that aren't necessarily they're not as good as their market competitors.
Right.
And you can write a review about them, and you can. And one of the things that I have tried to do now is I avoid, when I'm writing actual reviews, I try to avoid offering my opinion. And my big thing is I want to give people the numbers. And if I do that consistently for everything that I review, if I review a Glock 17 and I give you the performance numbers aggregated over 1,000 rounds of shooting, and then I review a... I'm trying to think who's never advertised with me and who never will. If I review a Kel-Tec and I give you the same performance number and I give you the exact same metrics, the data that I use to test the Glock, I use to test the Kel-Tec as well, and then I show you the numbers and the comparison, I want to let people draw their own conclusions from that information and try to avoid offering my opinion. And that's not to say I don't offer my opinions in other pieces, but when I'm doing hard reviews, I really try to stay away from that because it does the readers a disservice, because I've had people come up to me and tell me that they bought, you know, item X or item Y because I wrote a review about it and it was a positive review, and then they look at a really good example. I wrote a review of a holster, and it was a perfectly fine holster, there was nothing wrong with it. It just wasn't as good as some other holsters. And I said, it's a perfectly fine holster, blah, blah, blah. And a guy ran into me at a match who had bought the holster, and he was using it at the match. And then he's like, well, why aren't you using yours? And I felt like a jerk because I'm like, it's not as good as this holster. It isn't for what I do. And so that's one of the reasons why I really try to give people objective data to draw their own conclusions from, because I don't want someone to spend $800 on my word for a product that I wouldn't actually go and buy with my own money.
Right, and that seems to be I wish everyone acted that way, so it would be nice. We got a break coming up, so I'm going to throw you on hold for just a minute. But when we get back, we're going to talk more with Caleb about some of the other things that go on in the marketing side of the gun industry and just more about Gun Nuts Media. So right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Ryan Thomas, Monday on the Morning Show. Dad's going to vent his spleen. Tune in at 7:05. We'll find out together what's under his skin. About KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. For folks just tuning in, we're talking to Caleb Giddings from Gun Nuts Media. You can call us at 749-5500, or if you're out of town, listen online, 1-800-823-8255. We'll try and take your calls at the end of the evening if we're able. Right now, no one waiting on the line. So just keep in mind, I do reserve the right to make fun of you if I so choose to do so. But anyway, so, Caleb, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. I'm finally got the hang of this.
The skills are improving, Caleb.
Oh yeah, they are. So, yeah, Caleb's the president of Gun Nuts Media, was also a competitor on the first season of Top Shot on the History Channel. I'm going to sort of switch gears a little bit from the advertising and sort of talk about competition. And since we're disclosing things and all that, full disclosure, I'm a huge fan of competitive shooting for the purposes of self-defense, just because I really think that stress inoculation can't hurt. And if you can do it, you know, if you can't do it competing, then what makes you think you're going to be able to do it? Someone's trying to stab you or whatever. Caleb, I know you're a competitor, almost as much, more so than you are a gun writer. I mean, would you say that's a 50-50 split or...
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I will frequently tell people that I'm a shooter that happens to be able to write, and not the other way around. You know, if you put a gun to my head and said give up writing or give up shooting, I'd give up writing. I mean, I wouldn't be happy about it, but I love to shoot, and I love the competition environment. And I definitely like, and it's one of those things that has informed on my writing over the years is the fact that I would. You know, I shoot a lot of guns, and I shoot a lot of bullets, so that gives me an insight into the guns that I'm reviewing that you wouldn't necessarily see from someone who, you know, goes out and shoots 100 rounds here or there.
Yeah. So, I mean, where do you fall on the whole self-defense competition metric? I'm going to guess, because you are a competitive shooter, I have an idea what you're going to say, but I'm curious. What are your thoughts?
People who say that competition shooting is bad for self-defense are, generally speaking, not very good at shooting guns. I'm just going to be straight up with that. There is absolutely, there are a lot of things that, you know, people who are against competition shooting say, like, oh, you know, you're teaching yourself bad habits and blah, 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 which is actually insulting because it implies that the average shooter isn't smart enough to realize that there's a difference between being mugged and shooting a match. So,
right.
I generally believe that there are a lot of benefits to it, though, in all seriousness. I mean, you're learning how, if you're not learning tactics, and no one in the competition shooting circuit would say that you are, what you are learning how to do is manipulate your gun and get fast, accurate hits under stress. Is it the same stress that you'd experience in a gunfight? No, of course not. But until they, you know, but since it's not legal to go out and shoot people and inoculate yourself with the stress, competition's about the best option you're going to get.
Well, you can. I think they're still taking enlistments right now, but I do kind of. Well, I don't know. Sequestration might have ended that. And just to be clear, too, when you say good shooter, there are a lot of people I know that shoot very well, but I'm sorry. A guy like Robert Vogel or Ben Stoger or one of those dudes, you look at what they do versus what I do, and I consider myself relatively proficient. It's not even on the same planet. You know, and that's more of, when we say good shooter, Dave Savigny, you know, just want to one of those guys. I mean, obviously the equipment's not always the same. IDPA, you know, I don't know. I don't like vests for concealment gear, but I mean, there are certain things that are, I guess, a little less gamey than others, but, you know, you kind of mentioned tack. Go ahead.
The game is what you make of it. And if you go in, so I shoot competition to shoot the competition. Like, I am not trying to be tactical or do anything about that. I am there to shoot as best as I can and beat as many people as I can. That's my goal.
Right.
If you are a serious defensive shooter and you want to use competition to practice life-saving self-defense tactics, go ahead. It's not against the rules to shoot a USPSA match and use cover, slice corners, reload tactically, and scan. Do that. And that's the thing that kills me is you get these guys saying that, oh, competitional, you know, all these things, blah, blah, blah. Well, look, yeah, if you want to win, then you have to play the game. But no one's going to tell you that learning how to drive an F1 car is going to make you a terrible driver. You'll probably get pretty good at driving if you go to an F1 school.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, and it's funny you mentioned that, because the last match I shot, I didn't shoot for time because my gear wasn't legal. It wasn't. But, you know, I didn't really care. That's not why I was there. And you bring up a really good point, too. You really don't understand what works or doesn't work until you actually go out and run it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that seems to be something that people lose sight of. So, I mean, you just shot at Bianchi Cup, right? Bianchi
mm-hmm.
Cup.
Yeah.
How'd that go for you?
Not well. I was actually pretty disappointed with my performance. I had my gear was running great. I had been shooting really well in practice, and my mental game fell apart on one of the harder stages, and I ended up shooting below my score from last year and definitely below where I wanted to be. But the lesson from that is that, you know, there's always lessons in everything that you do. I did better in some events, so I can apply that and go forward and actually spend a lot of time working on the mental toughness training part of shooting.
Right. And I actually see, I read your blog, and I brought that up specifically just to illustrate a point for the readers. One of the reasons why I like some of the stuff that Caleb puts out is he does not sugarcoat things as far as when he makes a mistake or doesn't make a mistake. I know Todd just said something recently on his blog, but I like stealing Todd's ideas whenever possible. So I thought I'd bring that up as well. And I think that's something that seems to be missing from a lot of the, not a lot, but some of the personalities you see in the shooting industry. And I thought I'd pay an on-air compliment there.
I thought they just never made mistakes.
Well, I don't make any mistakes other than
right.
I meant to hang up on Todd 4 times. I really, if you go back and listen to that podcast, you can actually hear my soul die at the 36-minute mark, give or take.
There's an IE, we have a defibrillator in here for when John makes a mistake.
Yeah, it kills me.
This is why I don't do podcasts anymore, because there's way too many logistics, and you have to, like, interact with people, and I can't, you know, just delete comments and stuff.
Well, and see, the other thing, too, is, I mean, podcasts, I guess we've got a lot of people that are listening live in the Cincinnati area, and they like to call in occasionally, or better yet, they like to send me emails. After the show about their thoughts on whatever it is I've said. And most of them are good, but not all of them. And then I feel sad and cry and drink too much. Anyway, going back to the competition versus the topic of the show, Jim's going to die in here. I wish I had a webcam. Jim Cirillo, who is probably one of the better known police gun fighters, he was on the New York Stakeout Squad. He wrote a book. He was a trainer afterwards. He said the competition shooting was one of the best things you could do as far as preparing yourself for situations like that, and I guess we'll swing back around finally. Some of the shots that you make in competition are not easy shots if you're standing still and just taking your time.
Well, just today I had to make I shot a club match because I'm training up for my next major match, and I had to, it was the last two shots of a 23-round stage, so I'd already been running, I'd already, you know, for about 20 seconds, my heart rate was up, and I had to make a 15 to 20-yard headshot on a target that was partially obscured by a no-shoot. It was the only place in the stage to take it, and I mean, I made the shot, so I was pretty happy with that. But if people think that, you know, you've been running for 20 seconds, your heart rate's up, people are watching, it's the last stage of the day, you're tired, you're hot, you're maybe a little dehydrated because you drank too much last night, that last one's hypothetical, of course.
Right,
of course.
But if people, you know, and if people think that that's not good stress inoculation for having to defend yourself, I can't help those people.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing to consider, too, is a lot of ranges won't let you work from the holsters. So the match is one of the few places where you actually get to draw and fire your gun. Not everyone's lucky, and I've got somewhere I can shoot that I'm usually the only idiot there, so it's relatively safe. I'm the only one that'll get hurt, I guess.
Don't, you know, and near yourself.
Yeah, something like that. That's, hey, whatever. And you brought it up too. The whole moving and shooting seems to be, that's been a, I know, a big discussion lately. We got about 30 seconds left. What's your biggest takeaway, do you think, from competition usually?
That I need to shoot faster and more accurately.
Well, I guess I kind of had that one coming.
Hard to argue with, though.
Well, that is the crux of it. I mean, if you think about a self-defense situation, that's it. You need to shoot good, accurate shots as quickly as you can. And, yeah, there's no timer, but the other dude is trying to shoot you. I stole that from someone, too. anyway, so right now we're going to go back to commercial. We're going to be taking your questions in just a little bit. Call in at 749-5500. But right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
This is your exclusive home for Glenn Beck.
Oh, man.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Right now, no one on the line, so if you want to get in, I'll probably get at least one or two calls if someone does call. 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. Still talking to Caleb Giddings, Gun Nuts Media. Caleb, still there?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. So one thing that I remember reading years ago, and I thought I'd bring this story up because it's actually a really good idea. Well, not it's a good example of using what you got. Tell the coffee story, please.
I will try to condense it. So long story short, I was an insurance agent in Indiana, and my office was in not like a bad part of town, but you know that part of town, like the Romulan neutral zone in between the ninth part of town and the part of town.
That's great.
And I was leaving work one day, and I wasn't really paying attention, and I was locking up my office, and this dude came around the corner with some sort of knife or something in his hand and asked me to give him my money and my car keys, and I was holding a cup of coffee in my left hand. And one thing that people don't actually know about me is while I everyone who's seen me shoot thinks I'm right-handed, I'm actually left-handed.
Huh.
But I'm right-eye dominant, and growing up, it was a lot easier to get gear for right-handed people, so I just learned to shoot right-handed, and that's how I do it now. So I'm holding a cup of coffee in my left hand, and I threw my coffee at him while I attempted to fish my tiny Beretta Jetfire out of its crappy pocket holster. By the time I got my Jetfire out, the guy had been hit in the chest with a cup of Starbucks Finest and was decided that he had somewhere else he needed to be, probably church. And, you know, so he was running off, and I didn't have to shoot him, and I put my gun back away, and I went back in my office and, you know, had a heart attack. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, you know, when a friend of mine asked me why I threw my cup of coffee at him, and I was like, it was in my hand, and it seemed like the thing to do at the time.
Right.
Now, Caleb, do you recommend a specific load? Is it a 4 or 5 shot espresso, or you know,
the hotter the better is generally how I go with it. So you know, you want something. Milk has a latte is really good because they got a lot of milk in them, and milk's got a really high specific heat, so it'll retain that heat well and really cause some nice scalding burn.
I like how you thought through the technical aspect of this.
He didn't think it through until after he did it, I'm sure. No.
Yeah, no.
That was probably more expensive than your premium quality self-defense ammunition. That wouldn't have been about $5 a round.
Oh, gosh. Well, actually, I had premium quality 25 ACP ammunition, which is actually really expensive because nobody buys it.
I get asked for 25 ACP all the time, and it's the I can't tell the story on air. Never mind. I'm gonna get fired.
What else are you gonna feed your raven?
Oh, jeez. So.
Now, I will say this. If you're looking for a pocket gun, and I don't carry a pocket gun anymore because I work in the gun industry, so I can carry a big gun, and no one in my office is going to care if I have a gun.
Right.
But the Beretta Jetfire, they don't make it anymore. It's a little single-stack 25 ACP, holds 8 rounds, plus one in the chamber. And you know what? It's actually a really good little gun. And I had two of them, and I sold both of them, and I wish – and. Now every time I see one on Gunbroker, I'm like, oh, Jetfire, I want to buy you again.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I mean, we're actually going to have Claude Werner on the show the 30th of June. And if you don't know who he is, one of his claims to fame is he runs a little pocket gun better than almost anyone else I've seen, and just has all sorts of interesting insights into it. But the thing, I guess, that people, you know, lose sight of is, yeah, I'll make fun of you for carrying a 25, but I still don't want to get shot with one.
Right.
And it sure beats a sharp stick, kind of, almost. It's rule number one of a gunfight. Well, rule number two. Rule number one of a gunfight is don't get in a gunfight. Rule
right.
number two, though, have a gun. And that seems to be something, you know, especially and I'm one of them, the tactical people lose sight of is, well, you got to be carrying your 19 rounds and 9mm in the gun and, you know, your 4 reloads or whatever. So I bet that Beretta was rather comforting after you ran out of coffee to throw at him.
Yeah, it definitely, I mean, I felt better having it. And at the same time, I wished I'd had a bigger gun with more bullets that I could have gotten into the fight quicker and all of the other things, which is why I went away from the pocket gun after that, because the thing that didn't work was getting it out of the holster. Mm-hmm. And unless you have a holster that is designed, a pocket that is on, like TacPans, really easy to draw a pocket gun out of those. Banana Republic khakis, not so much.
Right.
So, Banana, you know, it's Republic. One of those things where, hey, go ahead.
Hey, it's just because I can't, they don't make a size that will fit me. That's
fair enough.
That's why. So.
I love pocket guns, but at the same time, I tell people all the time, if you can do better than a pocket gun, try.
Yeah, I mean, and Kathy Jackson said something interesting on the show.
Kathy's a smart cookie, and y'all should listen to stuff that she says.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought it was great, because there was actually some things that I hadn't thought of, but one of the things that she said that I thought was really great, and I'm not going to be able to hit it exactly unless I've got it saved in my drafts here, which I don't, damn. It's just the gun's not going to be comfortable unless you've made the decision that the gun is worth carrying. And I mean, that's me paraphrasing, but you can carry a gun. Anyone can. I don't care who you are. It might be a little gun, but you can carry it. And that's something to keep in mind. And it's kind of like you said, yeah, okay, it was a Beretta, but you had it, and it was there. And you'd have probably emptied it pretty darn quick if you had to, if that coffee hadn't worked. So
yeah, you know, I'm actually quite glad the coffee worked, because I really didn't feel like shooting anybody that day. So
yeah.
It wasn't one of those mornings where you wake up and you're like, man, you know what would be awesome? If I could get into a gunfight today. I've yet to have one of those mornings, but I'm told that they have. The Brady campaign tells me that people like me have those mornings all the time, but I'm still waiting, and I haven't had one yet. So
I think the guys that enjoy that sort of thing stay in the military.
Yeah, they really do.
Then I mean, hey, whatever. That's cool. I like reading books. I mean, if your thing's getting into gunfights or shootings, I guess there's a difference. My one buddy, he says there's a big difference between a gunfight and a shooting, and the shooting's a lot more fun. So, but
I'm gonna have to remember that. That's good.
Well, yeah, Sean. Anyway,
of course, Sean said that. Sean is so I've actually had dinner with Sean a couple of times, once at SHOT Show. And Sean is hilarious in person.
He is, and. That's a different show. Sean's got a lot of really good advice, and for those that didn't catch the show, he was on the show a couple weeks ago. It was actually what show was that? It was the May 5th show which is on our website, ballisticradio.com. You can take a listen to it. But we got a couple more minutes, and everyone's out enjoying the lovely weather today. So
it's pretty beautiful here in Sioux Falls, too. Not going to lie, it's kind of a nice day outside.
I'm sorry that we interrupted your afternoon, and I appreciate it. Hey, at least it didn't run into Game of Thrones. So,
right. So we're good. As long as you're not cutting into my Game of Thrones time on Sunday, we're happy.
Right. So just out of curiosity, I guess, you just started a new magazine, Gun Up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of a jump to go from online to the print magazine. What have been some of the biggest challenges there for starting a new gun magazine?
Mostly learning how to run a print magazine. I mean, we hired, we stole our editor, Shelley, from Western Shooting Journal. So she had some chops and she knows how to put together a really high quality magazine. But with many of the things that I've done in this industry, it's been I decided I wanted to do them, then I had to learn how to do them, you know, and that's online ad sales, running a successful blog, pretty much everything I've done, I've sort of learned, you know, I've had the best kind of on-the-job training, which is if you don't succeed, you fail. And with the magazine, you know, I think our biggest challenge has been dealing with the differences in creating good magazine content that engages readers and creating good, you know, and how different that is from creating good online content that engages readers, because it's two completely different worlds, and you have to change your mindset of what you're writing and how you're writing it.
Right. So, well, hey, Caleb, I really appreciate you taking the time to call in and interrupt your Sunday the way you did, and it was actually really informative because I haven't ever heard of the I haven't really been into the marketing side of the gun industry, so I appreciate you taking the time.
It's my pleasure.
Hey, so everyone, check out gunnuts.net, also Gun Up. I've read it. It's a really cool magazine, actually. So, Caleb, you enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. So I just wanted to take a minute for everyone. We're just talking about the show. The show's really taken off, and I appreciate everyone listening. We've got some great things coming up. Next week, you've heard their ads during our show. We're going to have the guys from Point Blank on to talk range safety and what goes into building a state-of-the-art shooting facility. Make sure you check out their website. Also, check us out at ballisticradio.com and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and as always, be safe.